Major Plowman, Real 6. I was asking you what appointment you were given when you arrived at the regiment.
Well, the rear young constable had on and was still on the sergeant, and that was, as it were, 3 IC of the squadron. Was not in good health and was going back to England for extended leave. And I was asked to hotel to understudy him. And there is an ordinary fighting crew, had some dozen men, one of the given tank troops of the Navy team in squadron headquarters, was 55 to 60. That and the transport troop group. That was not going to be 60 in there as well. And so it was my job to go out to them, and I started the troop group and took all the details and everything. And I had two tasters. A profession I'd never heard of, and so on, and so it was quite a good experience.
What was the role of the rail link officer? What did he do?
Well, the rail link officer in battle well, if we come to the tanks which are more familiar with war, we have HQ troop consists of the squadron leader and the rear link officer and troop sergeant. And the officer in charge of the rear link tank was on the regiment. The squadron leader was met into his troops, and the rear link officer was reporting from squadron to regiment.
Was he in the same vehicle as the squadron commander?
Yeah. He was operated very close together. Well, theoretically, they could use the visa, but I mentioned earlier the visa.
I think you said the B-set was useless.
But in times of peace, as it were, training, he had all his men he was in charge of.
What sort of men were they? What sort of jobs were they doing?
Well, it'd be a white scout. We had a white scout car, emergency fitting.
Yeah.
With a white scout car ambulance. Mm. And I think the aviation really was the aviation.
And they were all serving the fighting troops.
And the sergeant manager was, squadron sergeant manager was with them. And when we went into Harper, the squadron sergeant manager would be organised, as you see.
But he would dictate the layout of the.
Yeah. He made a scout car.
What vehicle did you have when you were fulfilling this role? What vehicle did you have?
When I was.
When you were understudying the rear link?
Well, we were in some camp, so But I wanted a bed, and I just asked, could I have the Jeep or could I have this?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't want the children. We weren't sure of transport. But the regiment was very busy then with this conversion. I should explain that when they, after the fall of Tunis, obviously the next thing was to go into Europe, and they decided that there were far too many armoured car regiments for use in they regarded as close country as opposed to the desert. And so, the armoured car regiments were allotted first to army and then to corps. The armoured divisions were to have what was known as an armoured reconnaissance regiment. And this is what happened to 6th Armoured Division. Now, I'm not sure whether this was repeated in all the other armoured divisions, but it was certainly the case in the 6th Armoured Division. And the troop consisted of 2 Shannons and 2 cut-down Allies or General Steelers or something like that. By cut-down, I mean there was no turret. So it was like a glorified bread carrier.
What was the idea behind doing that?
Well, just as in an armoured car troop, you had 2 scout cars.
Yes.
When it was minor, you had 1 scout car in the bath, followed by the dying armoured car, and then another armoured car in the other. And the armoured car had been tanks, it was said, the leading army and the rear army. And that leading scout car or hunting virtually nosed ahead until it drew fire. And according to what sort of fire it was, but if it was really, if it was on the piercing or H, it would it would turn about if it could, or get a reverse out of trouble. And the leading tank or the leading armoured car would endeavour to engage the enemy. And the troop leader would dispose of his vehicle in accordance with the threat. But that was the idea that the lightly armoured vehicle went ahead, which is so much more speedy, but out of trouble. And also, it had all round observation.
Was it open to the top?
Yes.
Mm. How many men would you put into one of those?
4. Mm. So they had 5 in the 2 shells and 4 in each other.
That's 18 men. How did the regiment take to the idea of being converted from armoured cars to its new role?
I don't really know, because it was well settled. And when I got there, there was a squadron leader from the 65th Lancers, Major Anthony Bulletin. Was the head of training, and had 3 wings, 1 for gunnery, 1 for wireless, and 1 for driving and maintenance. And we were all we did so many weeks in each. And a special part of the camp was set aside for that, and I remember we had a break at 11, and we would go to, in my case, I went to B Squadron officers missed because their lines were nearer the training school, as it were, which was an improvised training school. And this went on by certainly through July and August and into September.
Did you find that there were radical differences?
Oh, yes, because the Sherman had this 75mm gun with high explosive AT ammunition, and we had to learn that some of the drill of artillery. Working out the range and bracketing the target and so forth. And it was much more, whereas with the 2-pounder, which was all we had before, was the target within range or not. As the gunner would, with a telescopic sight, aim at it, and that was that. But of course, with AG, well, we could shell infantry or the house trenches or scrub. So that was entirely new to us, really. Crusade. You see, it was Crusade. We trained on Crusade as an even 2-pound. I think the Churchill, as far as I know at that stage, the Churchill had to use solid shots, as far as I know. This American 75 was a very useful gun. Because the trouble was, it was low, and it wasn't much use for tank to tank combat. We had one call to the gun that he was either HD or AP. I'm a piercing shot, but it had to be a very small tank for the British, for the German 75 to penetrate.
Were you aware of that at the time? Did you know about the weaknesses of the 75? Yes. Did you do lots of live firing with the 75 during this training?
Yes, we did. And I possibly would not have been wearing a hearing aid if we hadn't. No, we did on the range. I remember one particular day I was in charge of what was called a troop shoot, and I was all day long on the back of the tank. And the two tanks on either side. And very desperate, because in the turret you didn't get the blast, you see, but from the muzzle, but out there I was expected, and that's by the fire.
What did the cut down honey have as armament?
It's a 0.5 Breezer, Browning, 0.5 Browning, and a 3, and also a 0.3. Well, you know what that would do. Because of the bread, you know, the bread in the brain carrier. suppose it would penetrate very much, would it?
Soft targets only.
Yeah.
And what about the other aspects of the training, the wireless? Did they have the same sort of wireless system that you were used to?
Yes.
And then the driving and maintenance. Obviously the Sherman was a much bigger vehicle and it was tracked rather than wheeled.
They were diesel
Shermans, not petrol.
Well, it became terribly important in Italy to have good drivers, because you were operating on narrow roads and narrow tracks and precipitous mountain sides. One's driver was all important.
Did they take to the Sherman and the Honey reasonably easily, moving from armoured cars?
Well, you won't have these chaps in the troop, and there's one or two cut out for it, you know. But everybody had the training.
You all trained on every aspect? You were all trained on every aspect?
Yes. And we spent the whole of that winter training in troop training, squadron training, and divisional exercising. We didn't really expect to be left there all that time.
Did you remain in Algeria the whole time?
Yeah.
What sort of level were you doing normally? Was it troop level or squadron or regimental level?
Well, everything. Of course, I was in that position with the super. It was personally administered in my for the first few months. When we weren't doing learning all about the Sherman, my duties were virtually administered. And then immediately after Christmas, I was posted to A Squadron and got a troop. And became a troop leader.
You mentioned doing a divisional exercise. Do you remember anything about that, about the character and form of that divisional exercise?
Yes. It was called Light Blue.
Why was it a disaster? What went wrong?
Well, I can only remember my small part. I was put into the lead. I'm not sure what the formation was, but it was more than regiment. But I knew my colonel was one of the umpires. And I was given my orders, and advanced along this road, a narrow road, but with swampy sort of ground on either side and quite high hills, semi mountain, say 2 miles either side. And there was scrub and bushes and so on. And the former, well, at that stage, one gave orders over the precinct. And my troop, I was the only rookie in the troop. They'd all been through the North African campaign. And the leading sky car proceeded and lived, at least three Germans with bazookas under them behind every bush. And the pilot of the P wanted this part of the exercise to press on to ready for the next incident that would be provoked. And
was this
I kept saying, get on, you think, this chap. Either he didn't get the signals or he thought I was wrong, and he went so cautiously, and everybody behind me, all down the chain of command, they get more and more furious with this man plan, and they wasn't getting on, you know.
Was this the advanced contact? Was that? Was this phase of the exercise an advanced contact?
Well, it was certainly more than regimental. There were other officers involved. Mm.
But I mean, it was an advanced contact at divisional level.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
you were in the recce role?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, eventually I ordered him to put on over the exit, and then he still didn't respond. And at that moment, the colonel found me right on the back of my tank. He gave me a tremendous rocket. Above the roar of the engine. Well, I couldn't really hear what he said about the roar of the engine. Anyway, so I ordered my driver to advance, and they motored on, and I took the lead, and then the exercise proceeded from there. But that was my, I mentioned earlier, that the B-50 was useful.
What were you in? Were you riding in a Sherman on that occasion?
Yeah. Mm. I've got my troop running ahead, leading him in. My Sherman, the sergeant Sherman. Well, but it was disastrous from my squadron point of view, because various troops got bogged down in this swampy ground. It was February, late, but there'd been a lot of rain. And it followed after that we had a great personnel and a lot of changes made in personnel within the command. And from then on, it was a very heavy squadron and became very efficient. But that was my first. Well, when I got in Italy, I got into a spot on the ground, and apparently they thought I'd done rather well. And when I got back at night, the colonel said, must have been that rocket I gave you on my floor, and I thought it was different to you.
Do you remember where that exercise was taking place?
Somewhere up. Not far from the coast, not far from the coast, yeah. North of where we were, but south of the coast, of course, it was not populated.
How long did it go on for?
A week, I think.
Was it an opposed exercise?
Yeah. They really, we got a lot of them got bogged down. I didn't say a lot got bogged down.
When you were on that road, going over the soft ground, was it on an embankment or causeway, or was it just flat?
It was either side was sort of wetland. Okay, but a few goats, and things had dried out, you know, very boggy. Mm. The water was shed from these mountains. I think they were quite high. They probably were mountains. They were certainly high hills, rocky.
Did you get up into those heights during the exercise?
Yeah.
Was it all on the flat then?
Yeah. The point it was impossible to get off the road. It was being bombed down. But we were able, as we pushed on, we were able to get off the road. The hill for a bit. But it was easy to get into trouble, just to track off and get bombed down.
Were you a troop commander at that stage, or did that happen later?
Beginning. And then we had this troop for 2 weeks. And when we had this reorganisation, I was another troop. Which I kept to me every year.
But which troop was that?
I started with 4 troops. I was transferred to 2 troops.
Did 2 troop differ in any significant way from 4 troop?
Well, it's a matter of clash of personalities, really. When we got a new squadron leader, I said to him, I'd like a new sergeant. he seemed to be sympathetic. Then he sent for me a bit later, said, I'm moving you to 2 troop. And the first sergeant, really, he treated me as new from England in that quarters. Not knowing anything or being out of touch. And I said, well, this is what sounds like. He said, well, we don't do that. That's not necessary. He's very abstract.
Was he a very experienced man?
Quite experienced, but very impressed by the dangers of his experience.
What was his background? Was he territorial?
He was a territorial. He was competent, but if I say, from my point of view, he was a negative personality. At that stage, we had a rapport with the men, and it was between me and the men. It was the best thing that could have happened to me to get moved. And they were perfectly good chefs. It was just this. He was determined to oppose me when he could.
Do you know why he'd taken against you on that?
He'd had some experience of inexperienced officers. Some officers, in action, yeah. It was the officer who was there on trial, most things were demanded of him, and he had to make the right decisions and look after his men. And they had to have confidence in him. And there were some misfits. They had to be. They were new to the job. They'd never been at the war before. Possibly 10% of them were not up to it. Well, NCOs who came quite saw 2 or 3 officers out, either because they were casualties and they were removed for inefficiency or one reason or another, began to get a bit chary of